Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Tanika Reiner from England. She's an extraordinary psychic and visionary, an international speaker, author, and world-renowned expert on biomagnetism. As an author, her latest book is A Question for Jesus, which was published very recently. And in the book, she discusses the 16 years when Jesus' spirit communicated through her and answered questions asked by many people from all walks of life. So, welcome to the program, Tanika.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. It's not everyone that has the experience of being able to accommodate Jesus, if that's the way to describe the way he comes to you and speaks through you, and it's not everyone that has the opportunity to ask questions. I was wondering what I would ask if I had the opportunity, and I think it's very difficult because you wouldn't want to waste the opportunity. You want to ask something really specific, but I think mine would be one that he answered, and this might be just a good place to start. Which is to ask whether he really died on the cross. I should think a lot of people would ask that.
Yes, that was a question that did come up. And he did indeed die on the cross. And during one of the sessions, because the channeled sessions, which took some 16 years, would generally be, the taking place of them would be inspired by his essence, if he felt, obviously, that there was some clarification that needed to be spoken about. And I would invite certain people from all walks of life to ask whatever they felt appropriate. And on this particular occasion, someone did ask about the cross. And going from his memory, because he didn't ever just answer and give just a flat answer, because his essence, his frequency, if you like, his spirit, whatever people would call that, because all I am at that point is a conduit for his energy or the energy of any spirit that so wishes to talk or that type of thing. And so what you get is you also get the memories, the impressions, everything that spirit felt, you would be filled with all those memories. So it really does become multi-dimensional within the answer. And he died on the cross, and contrary to, this is where the book is perhaps somewhat challenging, it does differ to descriptions in the Bible, in so much that when Jesus died, he died alone. He was actually made an example of, because he was being, he wasn't fearful of the priests of that time. And in actual fact, during his trial, he was given quite an opportunity to declare himself insane and to say everything he ever said he made up and wasn't real. Well, he could not turn his back on the truth, so he wouldn't take that opportunity. And I could actually see from the trial that he was really reluctantly, by the Romans, made an example of, and that's why he was actually crucified alone and not with the two robbers that are spoken about in the Bible.
Yes.
And he died on the cross. Sorry, what were you going to say, Mike?
Well, I was going to say that I think it's accepted by people that do not have staunch, rigid beliefs that the Bible can't really be taken as 100% truthful. Mm. Whether it was intentional or not, or whether someone just glossed it over to make it sound more interesting, information like you're giving actually confirms what we think, doesn't it? You can't really take it word for word.
Yes. Well, and interestingly, when you know, all this happened all those years ago, I found gradually the information that Jesus' spirit would offer would then later, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 6 years later, would somehow be confirmed, whether it was in newspaper articles and or research that had been done. So things were actually confirmed along the way. And one of the spirits that came by during these sessions, which is in the book as well, is the essence or the spirit of Peter, who was Jesus's really good friend. And when he came through the first time, he's been through twice, he actually found it very, 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 very difficult to actually speak. That's to say, if you can imagine there's a group of people in the room and someone enters, and then generally someone in that group will say, welcome, but nobody really seemed to pick up on that. And Peter was really, really reluctant to speak. And cutting a long story short, the gist of it was because he himself, and he admitted to this, had actually fabricated the stories when Jesus had died because, as he put it, the simple truth didn't seem enough. People wanted more. And in many ways, he was goaded for more. So he added his slant on it, a bit like Chinese whispers. And so the stories became very exaggerated, but it seemed that's what people want. And, of course, he was really quite in a very upset state because he realized through the exaggeration what has actually occurred is we have then become as a whole race, as a spiritual race, we've become quite limited because we've had these false words put on us, and you know you can't actually move forward when there's a wall of false words. And
yes.
So you know, someone in the group actually said to Peter's spirit, well, you know, they could really feel his pain, and said to him, look, you know, we've all exaggerated things from time to time, you know, just to say, look, it's okay. But you could really feel this was a really big, big burden in the soul of Peter. So So I guess the reason really why perhaps Jesus initially came through me was after I'd had my awakening, which is a bit of a story. And it's when I found I could actually communicate with everything in creation, everything that has a consciousness, be it plant, animal, mineral, organ of the body, diseases, absolutely everything. And it was after I'd been doing that for a few years that his spirit first came in. And I think how it works is, if there is somehow a mass conscious questioning from society, whether it's conscious or a subconscious questioning from society as to what happened, I think that then draws the spirit of the person they're asking about. And I guess I'm a bit just like a magnet that is able for the spirit to come into and then say how things were.
Hmm. Now,
so I think that's how that works.
Right. Now, I understand you started channeling in 1991, so did these events you're talking of happen before that?
No, these happened after the channeling. The awakening happened around in the early months of 1991, and that was when I'd literally come to a crossroads in my life where I'd been working with archangels before that, for a number of years before that, so I had felt their existence. And I have to say, just so people understand, and I'm sure that the listeners will, that when you do connect with a consciousness, like I say, be it an archangel or any other consciousness in the universe, you're connecting with a frequency that they resonate on, so it's a form of energy. So because they're energy, they don't have a form. And so when I was working with the archangels years before, I could actually feel their frequency around me, which actually did feel like wings. But of course, I knew they didn't have wings because they were energy. But energy moves, and their energy would actually feel like a fluttering. So I understand why they would be depicted with wings, etc., etc. But when I finally come to this crossroads and said, look, you know, I really can't fight against myself anymore, because I knew there was something quite perhaps extraordinary, for want of a better word to say. I knew there was about me, and I had a very colourful childhood, and all I wanted was to have a normal life. I wanted to just be normal, like, well, I suppose I thought everybody else was. So I just wanted a normal life and just blend into the crowd. And so the situation became that I actually was fighting against myself, because I knew there was this extraordinary thing inside. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted to be normal. I wanted just to mosey on through life and perhaps not be noticed. And so I had this really massive fight going on, to the point where I'd literally got to where if I hadn't succumbed to my destiny, it's a cliche, but my destiny, then I would have left the planet. So I sat down in my bedroom one day and I just said to the universe, right, I said, I can't fight anymore. I said, whatever it takes, I'll just do it. I'll just do it. And I have to say, Mike, at that point, as I said, I didn't know what it was, and I thought perhaps it might be something physical, like cleaning toilets out, you know, for the rest of my life. I've done that before. Yes. There's nothing wrong with that if you've got a bit of peace and that's all I wanted. Or perhaps maybe being a kindergarten teacher or working in a hospital or something like that. To me, I didn't care what it was, so long as the fight stopped. So I said, right, I'm now burnt out. You know, I can't fight anymore. So I was presented with two roads. The road that I couldn't go down anymore, because that was sure death. And then there was this other road, which I hadn't a clue what was on that road at all. And I had asked Archangel Michael to be with me, because I knew he would be there. And when this awakening occurred, the power that came into the room was absolutely terrifying. It wasn't how one would think it would be, bells and harps and all these wonderful colours and that. It was absolutely terrifying, but the terror was really coming from me, because the energy was so powerful. But I stayed with it, because I knew I couldn't go back on the other path. So I actually thought I could possibly die right now, because it was so powerful. And I thought, well, if that's my destiny, then so be it, because I can't go on that other path. And really, that's what happened. And then from that moment, I found I could connect with absolutely everything in creation. Planets, stars, deities, gods, goddesses, spirits of animals, individual people's angels, archangels. I mean, the list was absolutely endless, and that was great. And then it was a few years later when the actual essence of Jesus came by.
Right.
I also had to learn discernment along the way, which I'll just explain to the listeners, because it was really important to understand that the head, which is obviously where the mind is, where the will is, and that type of thing, where the thinking and the logic is and all that, that's where the ego sits as well. And so I learned very quickly via the universe to be able to discern that a spirit is who they say they are. And the only way for me that I could actually be sure before I allowed myself to go under and connect to universal flow, divine will, God, you know, whatever name you give this great energy, would be to have a certain sensation that would go into my blood, right through to my bones, that would tell me I was connected to the ultimate source. And that would be the only time when I would allow myself then to channel. Because if my head said, yes, you're this, you're this, you're this, that was no good, because that's where the ego was. So it would only be, whereas the blood and the bones are very ignorant, they don't have ego, and so I would only allow myself to go under when that occurred.
Right. So you apparently had contact with over 600 different types of energies. Now, during that period, did you record all these contacts? I mean, has it been the basis of your earlier
yes.
books or articles?
Yes. Well, I haven't put the channeled sessions in. I put snippets about what's occurred in the first book, because that was really the opening to absolutely everything, and so I do deal with the astral realms, the lower astral planes, because I've journeyed in and out of there extensively, within the realms of the archangels, so on, and I've explained to as much as my editor would allow me to, exactly what angels are and the difference between the soul and the angel, because there is a difference. I've explained about past lives and future lives and why ghosts are around and, you know, what's going on with those. But ultimately about time travel, because I do believe with the time travel, which is when I first time traveled back into the birth of Jesus, and I do believe we are all capable, every single one of us is capable of doing what I do. That there really is no difference. I just happen to, you know, people say you're a psychic, you're this and that, and actually, I just say, well, actually, I'm awake. That's all it is. I'm awake, and I do believe everyone is capable, particularly of the time travel, because when an individual can see and feel history as it happens, then there won't be any need for wars, which are all based on misunderstandings in any case. When you actually see and feel that, it really is quite something. And all these things are logged anyway within parallel universes, and they're all on frequencies, just as we're talking right now. And right. I do truly, truly believe everyone is capable of that.
But I would guess that by the same token, other people have certain goals in their life, and maybe not everyone has room for this experience as well.
Oh, that's right. And it, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm doing this and somebody else is, say, like, what's an example? Is say, fishing for fish in the sea. You know, everything has a place and it is equal to each other. You know, if everybody did what I did, well, we wouldn't be fed then, would we? That wouldn't be too good. You know,
indeed.
So everything is equal.
Right, yes. So, with the sessions with Jesus, and these occurred over a 16-year period, did he ever indicate to you why they were so infrequent?
Oh, they were only infrequent, Mike, because, you know, I'm a stubborn old ass. And I have four children, and I have a husband that only likes home cooking. You know, he can't even make a sandwich. Well, actually, he can.
Don't we all,
You know, and you know, and I run a clinic. You know, I'm a busy mum, and for me to actually sit down, I would be inspired, and the occasion would be made via the universe. But I was often filled with like thoughts, why me? You know, why me? I'm not even looking for this. All I ever wanted was a good night's sleep. You know, if someone had said you'd be doing this, I'd be thinking, oh, come on, where's Steven Spielberg in all this? You know, it just seemed absolutely crazy. And I just thought, I spent years thinking the universe has so got this wrong. You know, I'm not a Buddhist monk. I don't, you know, I'm not... I eat burgers. I do bless the meat, you know, thank the animal, you know, as well. But the point is, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm just a very, you know, when I say ordinary, I really am an ordinary person. And if someone tries to nick my car parking space in Chichester, I'll go up and I will sort them out, you know. So I'm you know, hearing all that, you think, why on earth? Why? You know? But I guess, you know, when I did write that section on the question for Jesus, why me? Because so many people look and think, well, why you? You know, you're kind of, you know, not what we would expect. And I think what I have about me is, and I'm not saying others don't, you know, but it's I guess what I have is, I am endlessly overwhelmed with the way creation works, be it a falling leaf or a rose that's about to open or birth itself, the seasons, the way you see strengths in people when they didn't know they had them, you know, all these things just completely, absolutely fill me endlessly. And I never, ever, ever, ever cease to be amazed by it all. And I think it's that sense of wonderment that's probably kept everything open. Does that make any sense?
I believe so, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And moving on to something else.
So going back to why was it so infrequent, was because I always thought the universe...
Yes.
Yeah, because I always thought the universe had got it wrong in me doing it, you know. I used to think, oh, go and find somebody else. I'm sure there's somebody else who can maybe put this out more, you know, and I just can't see that I'm the one doing this. So I've accepted it now. I don't fight with that now, but I'd always... And plus also, I had to make sure that I was really clear in myself. And the only way I could actually do that was, yeah, I'm not house proud, but the house had to be spotless. I had to make sure that nobody came to me with any problems. I had to really stay in a certain zone before this would happen. And when it did happen, it would be the most fantastic experience. And people had often said to me, were you ever exhausted after? You know, were you ever absolutely knackered? And after every single session, whether it was Jesus or with another universal spirit, every single session, I tell you, I could have run a marathon. I was just so, it was just so energizing and just wonderful.
Right. Now, one of the other questions I think that a lot of people again would ask, which is in your book, and you might comment on this, is the words that Jesus was alleged to have said when he was being crucified. I believe the Bible says something to the effect, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Tell us about the answer there.
Well, the answer there, this question was actually asked from someone who was studying theology. He'd asked this question. And at which point, when he said that, when he started saying these words, Jesus' spirit put my hand up to stop the words mid-flow, to stop them entering into his essence, into his spirit. He stopped them.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I don't know if you have in the States, but sometimes we have in the UK, we have adverts where maybe someone's chucking some water over and they freeze frame it and everything stops. Do you have that?
Yes, I know.
Well, that's what happened. So it was like the spirit of Jesus freeze-framed that whole statement. So those words could not enter his essence. And remember, his spirit, his essence is in my body, so I know exactly what's going on because I'm hearing, seeing and feeling everything. And the reason he didn't allow those... And then after about... a minute and a half, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, he very slowly put my hand down and simply said, I choose not to acknowledge these words. That's all he said. And going, and of course I can say what it was because obviously, you know, this is just me, you know, I had his spirit in there. And the reason he didn't acknowledge those words were because he didn't say them in the first place. Now, had he said, well, I never said those words, then what he would have been doing would have, by that mere statement, he would have been acknowledging those words just by rebounding. So he didn't acknowledge those words. And so I learned, it was a really fantastic lesson, I learned that that truth, absolute truth, you either get it or you don't. But real truth does not need defense. And it was that was a really powerful lesson. You either get it or you don't.
Yes.
And sometimes people say, sorry, Mike?
I was going to say, I can't remember if this was related to a question, but there was a comment in your book on how to look within one's soul. I wonder if you can recall that.
Yes, I can, because I was just doing another show the other day, and someone had asked a similar question, and I really had to go through it because I couldn't find the darned answer. But the answer, I did come across it, I did. And the answer simply was, and Jesus went very quiet when that question was asked. He went very, very quiet, and very, very still. And then he answered very, very gently and very precisely. And he said, practice non-judgment. And that's how to look within.
Meaning not to judge yourself?
Not to judge anything.
Anything,
yes. Just not to judge. Mm. Not to judge anything.
That, of course, people would find very difficult, because we're brought up in life where people continually make judgments about other people and other things, aren't they?
Well, they do, but actually, realistically, it really is a waste of time. Because it's not going to do yourself any good, it's not going to do anybody else any good, and it's certainly not going to do the planet any good. Questioning now is a very different thing. I do feel one should question all the time, question everything. But judging, it's almost limiting the flow of the universe. But what you have to remember as well, I've learned all these things with the spirit in my body, so I've seen the results of non-judgment and felt them as well. And really, judgment, being judgmental is such a waste. It really is just such a waste of time. You know, even with my children, if they say, can we do this or this, this and that, I'll always say, well, what do you think? And anything that they've done that's perhaps out of order, then there's always a consequence. But I would have warned them there's a consequence after if something happens. So I kind of always got my get out of jail free card going on.
Right, yeah. Does Jesus hear everyone's prayers?
Not the words. If you just talk, and you say this, and you say that, and you recite it, because that's what's written down, and I'm talking quite mundane now, and you just do this, da 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 da, and this is how it's written, so da 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 da. No, he doesn't hear those. But what he hears is when your heart talks, when the person's heart talks and really calls, he hears every single time. When you really talk from your heart, he hears everything.
Yes, I can understand that. There has to be some emotion in it, and hopefully love for the person you're asking.
Yes, because what you have to remember, that we're talking again about energy. So if you just say words, and a lot of people use what I call loose words, and they don't have any meaning, and they just fall on the wayside. Where did they go? They just fall on the wayside, or they build up, you know, blocks. So you can't get through to where you want to get through because the words are loose. So if you really think about what it is you're saying, really think about it, the person actually praying will find themselves praying in a different way than they would otherwise pray. If they really just allowed their heart to take over, they would be surprised at the exact formation of the words and the type of words that they actually use, and they'll feel that, and they'll feel uplifted just by doing that.
Very interesting. Now, you were talking of your time travel. Is that something you can do at will when you want to?
Well, I guess I pretty much could now. I choose not to, simply because to actually travel through the wormholes, because time travel is to do with wormholes, which are both scientifically and mathematically proven, and they do reckon, the scientists, that in some 2,000 years' time, that if they utilised all the atomic power of the whole world, all the nations combined, they will have enough energy to transport one human back through these wormholes. Well, the consciousness, the human consciousness, can disengage from the physical body and actually travel through these wormholes. Now, how I've been able to do it is, if you can imagine a coil, like a spiral going round, that's a wormhole. And what happens is, I would be overwhelmed with an influence, if you like, to travel back to a certain period in time. And it wouldn't come from me. It would literally come from this overpowering influence. That's what I've got to do. And then I'd make arrangements for people to come round and ask questions, while I was travelling back in time, and et cetera, et cetera. And then once I'd done that, the energy would draw away. It would go completely away, as if nothing had happened, as if it was not there in the first place. And you think, oh, I've misread that. And then it would come in again, and then it would go away again. And this would sometimes take days or weeks, or at the longest period, maybe about 6 weeks, till at one point when it goes out from its furthest, the energy goes out from its furthest. It's like, if you imagine you're on a beach and the waves come in and then they go out. That's what it's like. And when they go out, you're left there and there's like nobody around, and you think, I thought we were doing this. And then just before you're about to go under, or time travel, it literally comes in like a tsunami and takes over. It's quite amazing. But that is a form of trust, that is. And the reason I don't do it at will now is because I've been used to being governed by influence. And although I could say, well, yes, it would be nice to travel back in this time, I still know that perhaps the my will may overtake, and I wouldn't be coming from a pure source. So I tend to wait for the influence. Then I know I'm in much safer hands.
Yeah. Now, you obviously don't want to give out every detail of the words that came from Jesus, but there is one event that you did travel back to see, and that was his birth. Would you like to make a few comments about that experience?
Yes, well, that was actually the first time travel experience was, and it really absolutely did really blow me away, because I found by travelling back as well, obviously there's certain beliefs I had, because I've done nativity when I was a little kid, you know, most of us have, so that's ingrained, you know, in our memory. So to travel back, and I kept being reminded I had to let go of everything that I knew of, as they put it, this most sacred of nights. And yet I did find that difficult. I really had to really, really take a leap, if you like, to let go of that. And when I did do that, I was absolutely astounded. Well, first off, the first image I saw was of this, like a cobbled street. And I was a bit confused, because in my mind I figured that there would be dirt tracks, but it was it was cobbled. And, maybe some folks would think it was cobbled. I always thought it would be dirt tracks. And it was cobbled. But what was really strange was there was a lady who was pregnant, but you couldn't really see her pregnancy too well. But there wasn't a donkey. There was this man and this lady, but there wasn't a donkey. And my first thought was, where's the donkey? It might sound quite a naive thought, but I always felt sorry for anyone in the nativity who got to play the donkey, because they never wanted to be the donkey. So I thought, where's the donkey? And there wasn't a donkey. But what really astounded me was this lady was carrying a child, and the child was about two and a half years old, very bonny child. And I just was completely, well, you can imagine I was completely confused. But this was Mary and Joseph, and this child was her first son, who actually, she'd had a son before Jesus. Well, cut into the chase, you know, because the story does go on a fair bit, and Mary and Joseph end up in the town barn. It was a barn which was up the town to the right, and there was a scene where these men rushed in normal clothes, and they were searching, and they'd snatched Mary's child. And Joseph was standing in front of Mary, and they were obviously asking, you know, are there any more? And he was shaking his head, and he was obviously protecting Mary. And they'd taken the child away, which was, you know, I didn't see what had happened. And but it was not good at all. Poor Mary then went into labour, really, really traumatised. Anyway, let's move on a little bit, because there's a lot more about that. I don't want to belittle what happened. But the most magical part for me of the whole of that session was when the wise ones, they were known as the wise ones, had actually come to visit the Jesus, and when they came, the wise ones had these really tall hats, and the reason they had these really tall hats, I was told, was because they were so wise that these wise ones were revered more than kings for their wisdom. They were so, so wise. And the reason they had these high hats were so that their heads would always be higher than anybody else's. Okay. And I was also told, they bow to no one, but look how low they bow to the child. And I tell you, Mike, they could not bow any lower. It was just unbelievable. But the joy that emanated from these wise ones was just absolutely unbelievable. It was, we've all felt happiness, we've all felt joy, we've all felt pleasure and all those things. But I have to say, this type of feeling really, really is just even, it's off the Richter scale. It was just so incredible. And they, and one of them began lighting must have been the frankincense, and the reason that they lit this was to cleanse the energy of the babe, because it had been born in traumatic circumstances. And what you have to remember, I'm back in energy form, so I'm seeing Jesus's energy, and I'm actually thinking, if you could see what I could see, you know, this child is absolutely fine, this child is got no guns round, it is absolutely ace. And I've never bought the theory of halos round the heads, you know, in the paintings that we see, the churchy right. paintings. I could never understand halos. But I have to say, all around this child's head were stars. They were like stars, big ones, small ones, all around, like this halo around, and the most beautiful, beautiful blue eyes you could possibly see. Incredible. Yeah. Well, what happened was, about 2 years after that time travel episode, in one of our national papers, they did an article on where the wise men, they called it, came from, and it was from somewhere Turkey, you know, over by Turkey way. And they found that there's a sect over there that has been going for 2,000 years. And this sect, this religious order, whenever a newborn child is born, they will light frankincense, and they will light it to cleanse the energy of the child that's been born. And that's been going on for 2,000 years, which would have been about the, well, time, you know, which I, so I guess that's possibly the first time they did it with Jesus. And that was 2 years later that report came out.
Right. So, can I make the point there, incidentally, I believe you said there were only two wise men and not three.
Yes, two travelled together and one came separate. There were three. Two travelled together, two came right. together, and one came separate. One was a dark guy, and he came separate. So there were two that came from within the same vicinity, and one came separate. They didn't travel together.
Right. Oh, well, so at least that part was correct then, saying there were three wise men.
And I never saw any shepherds in the, you know, there weren't shepherds, you know, I was looking for shepherds in the field, never saw any shepherds. But what I did see was after Jesus was born, there were children coming in, there was young children, and I was a bit confused because Mary's son had been taken away and I guess had been killed, going via history. And so I was confused why these children were there. They were around the ages of 5, 6-ish, thereabouts. And then, of course, we learnt later on that it was just the younger children that got killed. It wasn't the older ones. And I also learnt later that it was the younger children, those children, that actually tended to the sheep. They were the actual shepherds. And one had actually brought in a lamb, well, a young sheep anyway, one that they could carry. So that was, so again, that was interesting, like a historical bit of history.
Do you think that the reason those men were looking for young children, or almost babes, was because they were under the impression Jesus had already been born and they wanted to murder him?
Well, I can't answer that because, and I have to say I don't know, because you have to remember I was going back in energy form, so I'm only seeing what's going on at the area where I'm back at. What was happening when the men in ordinary clothes, they weren't in soldiers' uniforms, they were in ordinary clothes, when they ran into the barn, there was a lot of there was a lot of panic and there was a lot of aggression and it was very fierce and it was almost like a panic aggression that was going on. Whether, you know, obviously we know that to be the case, that there was this fear that Jesus was going to be born, but it wasn't something that I, as going back in energy form, was actually aware of, because you don't get what somebody else is going on if they're not in that area. Are you with me?
Yes, yes. Right. Okay,
but I knew, but my guess is that Joseph was aware that they were after his child, you know, the unborn child, because although Mary hadn't given birth at that point, and he was really protecting Mary, really, really protecting her, and really very convincingly ensuring, you know, there's no one else here, there's no one else, you know, and he was protecting her pregnancy, that my guess is that he knew that if she, you know, she was about to give birth, they would have taken that child too. And he knew that, and that's why he was very protective.
Right. Now, Jesus did explain why the crucifixion took place. Do you recall that, or shall I give you a clue?
Well, no. That's pretty much ingrained on me. It's just his particular wording that I'm not so... I have to recall, but the situations, I can see all those. But the words, when they say the words, they're just so beautiful, and I can't generally recall those. I'd have to keep reading it myself, you know, like everybody else. But no, the reason for the crucifixion was because he knew he had a very strong passion. People say, did he know what his destiny was? He didn't know what his destiny was, you know. I don't know what my destiny was. You know, someone asked me that question and they answered it with, you know, they felt that everyone's destiny is really to share love in whatever form, you know, we can, you know. And I thought that was a really good answer. But Jesus didn't know what his destiny was, but what he did have was a really, really, he had a passion. He was a very, very passionate, very fiery character as well, and he was very driven by his passion to always declare the truth and common sense, because there wasn't an awful lot of common sense floating around in those days. It was pretty much governed by fear, and he had seen what his mother had gone through, and so his questioning was, you know, how could his father abandon someone so wonderful and who had such a good heart, you know, because she wasn't too, you know, she did suffer, did Mary. And so his of course you have to read the book a bit more about that. And so he couldn't see that the God of love would also be cause all this pain. He couldn't see that. And so he was driven by this intense passion. And he was constantly given ways where he could have denied his destiny, you know, denied everything inside. But his passion overruled everything. And so that what it appears his ultimate destiny was, as he died on the cross, was because he gave himself with so much love to mankind. And it wasn't the searing pain of the crucifixion, which of course was absolutely dreadful, you know, we must never forget that. But the searing pain that really burnt through his soul was the absolute pain that mankind was suffering to do this to another person. And he felt this immense pain. And it was through this pain that he felt for mankind that an energy that we now know as the Christ light or the Christ energy was able to be grounded into the planet, because he was almost like a self-sacrifice in many ways, because he could have got out of it, you know, but he didn't. And so in many ways it was a self-sacrifice. He knew what was going to happen, but he could not deny the truth. And so, you know, he was a self-sacrifice. And it was through his absolute immeasurable love that this wonderful energy, it's a very powerful healing energy, that was ignited into the earth and into the soul and the hearts of all of mankind, as I say, we now know as the Christ light or the Christ energy. And that's a bit like a plug. I'm going to use an analogy. If you want a bit of electricity, you stick a plug in, don't you, into the socket.
Yes.
And it was pretty much that's what Jesus was at that point. He was that socket for this wonderful energy to come into this planet. And that, as I understand, was his ultimate destiny. And that's what happened.
I think that fits in perfectly with what a lot of us think. Now, believe it or not, we're coming up to, as far as I can calculate, since we made a latest start, about the last 5 minutes of the program. So I'd like you to take this opportunity to tell people the website, your website address, and if they can get your book through that or whatever the situation is. So go ahead and give them that information.
Okay. Well, I actually took my website off simply because I felt, you know, all I am, because I had a lot of people kind of hanging a bit too much on my coattails, and all I am is just, I'm just a conduit for this to come through. And that's why the books were there. And so the books are now available on Amazon.com or any good bookstore, you know, going to a bookshop. But it's Amazon.com, just type in my name and that will come up. And I do believe, because the books really are very challenging and I think they call to the individual person, and when that person is ready to read them, they'll get them. And I think that's pretty much the best way that will work. And, you know, and really that's pretty much how that is. So the books are out there, you know, and if they go on Amazon.com, they'll find them. And Or, as I say, just Google in my name or whatever search engine you have in the US. But I felt I really needed to take my website off, because I am just an ordinary person doing no more, no less than anybody else. And I don't have all the answers, you know, just like anybody else doesn't have. And I felt that was the best thing. If people really do want to get in contact with me, then they obviously can go through the publisher and I will respond to them then, you know. That will be
That's
fine.
That's good. Yeah, well, undoubtedly you were set up for this, and it was clearly part of your life plan. And I think in being, as you call it, an ordinary person, I think the information you're giving out becomes more, if you like, reliable, because you haven't got any claim to fame, if you like. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, there's no hidden agendas. You know, I'm just, you know, it's just what I'm made to do, just like we're all made to do something, every single one of us, and that's how it is. But I tell you what, next lifetime I'm coming back as a ballerina or an opera singer. And if there's anyone in the queue in front of me, I shall push them out of the way, because that's what I'm coming back as next time.
Now, that's not very spiritual, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not. But I rather think I'd quite like that.
Yeah, well, at least you know what you want out of life. I should think after the service you've given, yes, they would let you become a ballerina. Well, look, I have to thank you very much, Tanika, for coming on to the programme. Sorry about the latest start, but as it's been pre-recorded for our listeners, it obviously doesn't make any difference.
So no, it's going to work great.
Yeah, it's been lovely.
And thank you so much for having me. You've been a lovely chap.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. I'm now going to quickly announce the guest for next week, who is Dr. Rhys Manley, who is a professional pastoral counsellor who had a near-death and spiritually transforming experience in 2008. As a result of that, it changed his life, and he has written two books relating to his experiences, one called Crossing Twice and Spirit Thinking. And we're going to talk about that with him. So, thank you for being with me today. And I
thank
do hope you can
you
make
so
it
much.
Next week. You're very
thank
welcome. It's very interesting to hear you talk. So, I would say, bless you all, dear ones. And thank you very much for being with me. Thank you.